one big square store, identical brand, and that's why I hate Walmart. Used to be you could drive around, stop in on three or four towns, encounter different sights and sounds, different if not unique, different accent, different smell, different things to buy and sell. Now it's all Taco Bell. I hate Walmart. Slow, relax your mind. Never knew what you'd find around the next bend. But now the freeway goes so straight, it go right past the pearly gate. I don't feel human, I feel like freight. I hate Walmart. I like to roam, I like to greet individuals on the street. You always know the one you meet is one of a kind. But more and more, they seem to me reflection of something on TV. When we're all alike, nobody's free. Boycott Newt Gingrich. I boycott everything which I've seen advertised. I used to go out for dinner in the diner. Now they say fast food is fine, but it tastes like it fell out of an airliner. It's enough to make you weep. I don't like board games. I don't like brand names. They make inflated claims.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, howdy, howdy, everybody. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon here on the Guy James Show. Yes, indeed. A pleasure to have you along with us once again. Hope you're having a good day where you are. It's a bright, shiny day here in southern Florida, and here we're messing with the volume knobs here a little bit. Hope we get that straightened out for you. How's that? Is that a little bit better? I think so. Yeah, we got some rain here today. First time in a couple of months that we've had any rain, any measurable rain, and it was really nice to get all the pollen calmed down and all that. Went to the old doctor this morning, the allergist, and things are looking good. Looking up. Feeling good, ready to rock and roll today. Hope you are too. Give us a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. We hope you do give us a call. You see, that's your job. My job here is to kind of like be the moderator of the show, throw in my 2 cents worth now and then, and your job is to call in and talk to us and help make this an actual talk show, you see. So now that we have our job straight, 866-546-5254. Do give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Had some new callers yesterday. That's always a nice thing. Lots to talk about today. Had a guest scheduled, but they had to cancel out at the last minute, so we're going to do that again hopefully tomorrow. And we also want to let all of our regular listeners know that Brad Friedman, with the Black Box voting issue, we're going to have him on once a week to update that whole situation. Brad and I haven't decided what day, but it kind of looks like it's going to be on Wednesday. So we'll have one segment a week with that issue on. And for all you folks that like to know what's happening on that, why, that should be good news for you. My oh my, so much going on in Washington right now. It really is difficult to keep up with it. Don't know where to start every day when the newspapers come out and the blogs and all the news all over the internet. It's information overload is what it is. I really can't keep track of all of it, and I'm sure a lot of you are having a tough time with it. But I found this little tidbit here that the White House is now demanding all of the agencies in the government. Now get this. Demanding that all of the agencies in the government, when they speak publicly from now on, to talk about progress in Iraq. Do you get that? There was a post on here said career appointees at the Department of Agriculture were stunned last week to receive email instructions that include Bush administration talking points saying such thing as President Bush has a very clear strategy for victory in Iraq in every speech they give at the department. They're supposed to include that in, and everybody in all the departments of government from now on when they give a speech, they're supposed to talk about Junior Bush's successes in Iraq. I wonder how that works exactly. I really would like to know, how does that work? So you're the Secretary of Agriculture, and you're out in, Storm Lake, Iowa, all right? Wonderful place, beautiful place. I love Storm Lake, Iowa. I love Iowa, period. Being a farm boy, of course I would love Iowa. Iowa and Illinois and Indiana and Ohio and Pennsylvania and all the good farmland, Wisconsin up there with their dairy farms. Nice. Anyway, you're the Secretary of Agriculture, and you're out there, and you're talking to a whole bunch of farmers and agribusiness people. You're at the local convention center there talking. You've got a crowd of several hundred agricultural people around, and you're the Secretary of Agriculture, and you're up speaking about this project and that project on agriculture and fertilizer and the price of soybeans, and in Iowa particularly the price of corn and hogs. And by the way, ain't that war great? I mean, come on. I mean, how are you supposed to work that in? How do you segue in? For example, if you're with the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, and you're talking about pollution some river, any river. I hate to pick one anymore. The EPA's done such a good job of getting things cleaned up around America. We don't have any more Cuyahoga River's on fire anymore that I know of. We don't have any more love canals that I know of. So things are getting cleaned up. Lake Erie's absolutely pristine now. It's never been more pristine and beautiful that I can recall. So you're the EPA director, and you're talking to a bunch of folks, and you say, boy, we're really glad that we got our rivers cleaned up, and by the way, it's good that we've got the emissions down coming out of the smokestacks and everything. And by the way, ain't that a hell of a war that George Bush has got going over there? I mean, I can imagine so many different, Secretary of Education talking about the coming to Florida and talking to a group of educators about FCAT test and teachers unions and all the problems that they have at school, and sort of kind of in the middle, work your way in. Yes, we have many problems with the school, and that reminds me of all the wonderful things that are happening in Iraq today in the schools. Wow. How'd you like to be under pressure like that from the good old White House? And it says, by the way, that your responses will be included in a weekly account sent to the White House. So, boys and girls from all the agencies in Washington, you better do this because they're checking up on you. Ah, yes. And how about that Molly Ivins? Do you not? Is Molly not a national treasure? I sure think she is. I think Molly. Well, you know Molly. Any of you that are aware of Molly Ivins, you know that Molly is. How shall I say it? Molly is not the upper crust like Queen Elizabeth or anything. She's a down-to-earth woman. She's a real woman. She's just my kind of gal, Molly Ivins is. If you don't want the truth, don't ask, because you're going to get it right in the face, the truth, every time. And I just want to read you a little bit of Molly's latest column. I'd give anything to be able to write like Molly Ivins. Her latest column came out today, The Best Little Whorehouse in Washington, it's called, by Molly Ivins. Of course, she says, I'm above sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So serious a servant of the public interest am I. I can fogey with the best. On my better days, I make David Broder look like Page Six. I don't care what anyone smoked 20 years ago. I approve of those who boogie till they puke, and I don't care who anyone in politics is screwing in private as long as they're not screwing the public. On the other hand, if you expect me to pass up a scandal involving poker, hookers, and the Watergate building with crooked defense contractors and the number three guy at the CIA named Dusty Fogo, she says in parentheses, Dusty Fogo, be still my heart. You'd expect too much. Any journalist who claims Hookergate is not a legitimate scandal is dead, has been for some time, and needs to be unplugged. In addition to sex, drugs, and rock and roll, Hookergate is rife with public interest questions, misfeasance, malfeasance, and nonfeasance, and many splendid moral points for the children. Recommended for Sunday school use, grades 7 and above. But for starters, let us consider the unenviable record of Porter Goss at the CIA. From the beginning of his tenure, Goss has been criticized for politicizing the agency. He brought a bunch of political hacks with him for staff, one of whom turns out to be the poker player called Nine Fingers. And in the end, he was probably fired for not having politicized the agency sufficiently. What is the point of politicizing an intelligence agency? So the CIA officials would get a report from some agent in Iraq saying, looks bad. The first thing they'd ask was, is the agent a Republican or a Democrat? Maybe there really are conservatives who believe everything in Iraq is hunky-dory and there's a giant media conspiracy to hide the joyous tidings. But as you may recall, the ever-nimble minds at Donnie Rumsfeld's shop have already tried paying public relations people to invent good news about Iraq and then plant it in newspapers there. It didn't work. In fact, it was so stupid, it was humiliating. Fortunately, the Pentagon was once again able to investigate itself and determine that it had done nothing illegal. So now they're turning the CIA over to a general who not only ran the warrantless wiretap program, but still can't figure out it's unconstitutional. Why do I get the feeling this is W and Carl again flipping the finger at some grown-up they don't like? General Michael Hayden had mixed reviews as director of the National Security Agency. He's evidently not a good manager, which makes him a perfect Bushy. But is he straightforward enough to have admitted that some of the warrantless spying had been done for political reasons? None of the usual Washington insiders seems to have a bead on this. Hayden would theoretically report to John Negroponte, Bush's supposed intelligence czar. Czar's a good name for Negroponte, I think, don't you? Anyway, she goes on to say, Negroponte is widely considered worthless. His major achievement so far seems to be organizational charts and buying furniture. Oh, Molly, I love you. You know me. No conspiracy theories here, but the Bush administration, which doesn't seem to be able to run much, set out to retool the CIA after 9/11 and the Iraq War. Problem is, everything that worked at the CIA that it warned about 9/11 and said the Iraq War was a bad idea was on the hit list. The Bushies wanted to eliminate the people who were right and promote those who were wrong. This is no way to shape up an intelligence agency, not to mention the White House spit fit over Joe Wilson's wife. Next, we need to contemplate sincere, old-fashioned, non-ideological greed, theft, and bribery. In the beginning, there was only Duke Cunningham, the high-living, fun-loving, super-patriot congressman from San Diego. His yacht was called the Dukester, and he had nice taste in 19th-century French commodes. While we all are happy to see our elected representatives enjoying themselves in Washington, that's real people's money. Actually, the yacht and commodes were paid for by defense contractor Brent Wilkes. Keep an eye on that player. It was people's money that paid for the defense contracts Wilkes allegedly bribed public officials into landing for his clients. The former Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security, Clark Kent Irvin, that would be the DHS equivalent of a police department's internal affairs chief, tried to blow the whistle on shady contracts at DHS and instead was thrown overboard himself. Folks, we'll never get government straightened out again if we don't keep the IG strong and independent. If the Bush administration continues to fall apart at this clip, I think we'll be grateful for incompetence as an excuse. Oh, Molly, you say it so well, so much better than I ever could. Molly Ivins, one very fine writer. And if you want to know anything about G.W. Bush, or you want to know anything about Junior Bush, she knows. She's a Texas gal. She's been covering Junior Bush for a long, long time now. A long time. Longer than she cares to remember. Longer than anybody in Texas cares to remember. It appears that in the state of Texas, many people would like to just see Mr. Bush disappear. His once very, very healthy approval rating has, well, it's really right down the toilet right now. So even in the great state of Texas, they don't like George Bush anymore. And speaking of not liking George Bush, I also picked this up, this little deal here, speaking of Texas, from the Dallas Business Journal. HUD secretary called a guy in the office after discussing the huge strides the agency had been made in doing business with minority-owned companies. Jackson closed with a cautionary tale, relaying a conversation he had with a prospective advertising contractor, Jackson being the head of HUD. Jackson said he'd made every effort to get a contract with HUD for 10 years. He made a heck of a proposal and was on the General Services Administration list, so we selected him. And he came in to see me and thank me for selecting him for the project. Then he said something. He said, "I have a problem with your president." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I don't like President Bush." I thought to myself, "Brother, you have a disconnect. The president is elected. I was selected. You wouldn't be getting the contract unless I was sitting here. If you have a problem with the president, don't tell the secretary." Well, Jackson bragged, the man didn't get the contract. Why should I reward somebody who doesn't like the president? So I guess what we need to do, and maybe they're already doing it without my knowledge, and maybe some of you know it, I guess we need to have some sort of a loyalty oath, some sort of a fealty toward Mr. Bush. In order to get a government contract from now on, we need to swear and face the White House and swear eternal loyalty to our fearless and godly leader, Junior Bush. Somebody think of up a good oath. And if you do, we'll use it here on the program. But yeah, we need a good oath, a loyalty oath for Junior Bush. Talked with our guest yesterday, Juan Cole, Professor Juan Cole, about Iran and the Middle East situation. And I've been giving that a lot of thought, and I know a lot of you have too. We've been a lot of email going around. A lot of thought on this current mess with Iran. And of course, we did speak with Professor Cole about it yesterday, and he had an interesting take on the whole thing. He's the expert, no question about that. But I've come to the conclusion that we're being had once again by the Bush gang. And let me explain, if you will, for just a moment. I think they got out their sabers, and they, to you Republicans, that means knives, big knives. I really think they got out their sabers and they polished them all up and started rattling them for all the world to hear. And why they do this? Are they really crazy enough to start a nuclear war with Iran? 70 million people, a big army, lots of modern weapons, lots of oil. What's the point? Does the Bush gang really think we could pull this off? Oh, sure, I'm positive they can find all the generals in the Pentagon they want who'd be willing to go to war against Iran. You can always find some gung-ho generals in the Pentagon that'll lead the troops into battle or else push the troops into battle. Throughout history, they're crazy hawkish military people in every country which has an army. So you stop and think about it. What would we have to gain by going to war with Iran? Really nothing that I can see. We couldn't possibly stand the financial burden that put upon us. There'd have to be massive borrowing for the massive military spending that it would necessitate. Because, let's face it, our military machinery is in bad need of repair and replacement after being taxed to the very limits over in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, do I think that they're refraining from going to war with Iran because they're decent men or they have any scruples? Do I believe they would shy away from another war because of the awful cost in American lives? Certainly not. This particular group of men have shown no compunction whatsoever about sacrificing as many American lives as is necessary to attain their warped agenda of imperialism in the Middle East. And make no mistake, that is what it is. It's imperialism of the highest order. So, no, I believe they are not serious about invading Iran. I really do. They're just trying to govern us with fear once again. It's a tactic that's worked so very well for them. And look how well it worked when they wanted to attack Iraq. Why, they had at least half of America convinced that the Iraqis were going to start slaughtering us by the hundreds of thousands with nukes and dirty bombs and poisoning our water, putting biological weapons in. You remember all that? Remember the fear that they spread? They had Americans convinced we were about to be annihilated if we didn't act and act soon. Shock and all. You remember that whole deal? Of course you do. However, I believe they miscalculated very badly. I think they had no plans whatsoever for any kind of an insurgency in Iraq like we have today. I really think they just totally blew it. People like to think that these are smart men. These are really intelligent men. After all, how could they get the positions they have if they weren't really smart and intelligent? I think this Iraq war proved just how damn intelligent these people are. Don't you? Don't you? I honestly believe they really thought it would be the cakewalk they were talking about. They didn't think old Saddam would go through with it. They were wrong, and they had to go into Iraq and back up their big talk by then. Well, they did, and look where it's gotten us. And they like to tell you where it's gotten us. All this prosperous, all these wonderful things that have happened in Iraq, and they do like to let us know at every opportunity that good old Muammar Gaddafi turned chicken after he saw what we were going to do to Saddam. Yeah, right, that's what changed him over. That whole deal in Iraq was nothing more than a warning to the rest of the world. Don't screw with Junior Bush and his friends, or he'll send in the big hardware and mess you up. That is what that was about. It was a bluff. They finally had to go through with it, or else look like idiots, and they did. Well, I guess Iran didn't get the message. And neither did Syria, and neither did North Korea. And none of the three right now seem particularly frightened by Bush the bully. And I think all three of those countries are willing to let Bush bring it on. They would probably tell him that in so many words, all three of them. No, sir, all this nuke talk in Iran is nothing more than fluff. I really believe that. Nothing more than a ruse to get the American people all riled up, along with the media, which in turn will get Iran ready to pee their pants with fear and back down, and Bushy Boy will be able to get in front of the American people and say, "See, I was right all along." That's what this is about. He needs a victory. And so if he gets Iran to back down, you know, "Hey, I did this. We showed him. I told you we'd tame the Middle East. I told you we'd bring democracy to this area. I told you I'm a tough ass-kicking Texas you don't want to fool around with. I'm the bully on the block, and I was right all along. Now, you whiny liberal Democrats can just kiss my fanny, because we Republicans are Americans, by God, and you Democrats are nothing but a bunch of little girly boys." That is what this whole thing is about. He wants to win a war without firing a shot. He'll get the public and the press so riled up, they'll think the Iranians are ready to attack at sunrise. And when it doesn't materialize, he'll claim victory. It's as simple as that. I only hope, and I know most of you hope as well with me, that he doesn't get into another spot like he did with Saddam, when old Saddam wouldn't back down and Bush had to invade Iraq to keep from looking like a wimp. If that happens this time, if Junior Bush keeps rattling his swords and the Iranians don't back down, he's either going to end up looking like a complete dumbass, the dumbass that he really is, or he'll have to take us into another war to save face. And he's just crazy enough to do it. I think we all know that. So it will be interesting to see what happens. I do believe it's a bluff. Hope it is. Hope I'm right on this. Love to hear what you have to say about it. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Give us a call. Let us know how you feel. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show. Well, let's try this again. There we go. You're on the Guy James Show. Hello.
Guy, I just wanted to let you know, at least at my end, I'm being kicked off the stream twice every minute.
Wow. I don't know.
I had a few other things on there, and I thought it might be an overload, but so I've shut everything else down and still doing it.
Now, we've got... it must be something on your end, Dave. I can tell by our numbers we've got here.
It's going out all right.
Yeah, it is. And I can tell how many are on the stream, and they're a great number on stream right now. So it's something in your area.
All right, Guy. I'll call you later if I can get you going.
Okay. Thank you, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Always something on the good old Internet. I wonder everybody has – we have it set so that – and we could set the quality of the stream higher, but if we did, then people would dial up, wouldn't be able to get in at all. So we kind of have a, and I'm no techie, I'm sitting here talking like I know what I'm talking about, but we have it set so that it'll work well for people with dial up or cable, whichever you happen to have. Of course, if you have cable, you're going to get better reception than the other people. That's just how it is. And a question I had, I put up on the Internet today. We have many, many people from California listen to the program, and I'm trying to figure out just why that is. I don't know. I would say, without question, our biggest audience is in California. And that's from the email I receive. And maybe the rest of you guys just don't send email, but preponderance of it does come from California. So who knows? Don't know what... don't know what that means for sure. Anyway, and where are we at here? We're at 20, almost 27 after the hour. I think we're. Hey, how many of you heard old Rush yesterday? Get it? I did. In fact, I didn't hear it live. Somebody sent it to me, and a caller got him yesterday. And I think I'll play that for you. And I enjoy it when someone gets to old Rushy like this and he doesn't quite know how to get out of it. And you'll see down toward the end of it how he does his best to squirm and squeal, but he doesn't get out of it. This woman really gets him.
Against him, it will be watered down. And I'm referring specifically to, I'm relating this specifically to the watered down charges that you had to face with your problem, which you let get out of hand before you did something about it.
Wait a second. You're going to compare me to Patrick Kennedy's circumstance?
In a way.
How so?
Because you were brought up on charges.
Tell me where they're similar. I had a problem. I admitted it. I went and dealt with it. I have been clean from the painkillers for almost 2 years and 8 months. Wait a second now. There's no cover up. I sought and received help. I didn't endanger anybody else. In this case, there's a cover-up. There's no breathalyzer. I fought this for 2.5 years, and they wanted to charge me with much more than they did.
Well, why didn't they?
Well, you'd have to ask them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So,
well, if you think I got preferential treatment, you are out of your mind.
Well, what happened to that housekeeper?
Hang on a minute, Alan. I spent thousands of hours and millions of dollars dealing with lawyers. I fought this at every stage.
Would you just tell me and your audience, what happened to the housekeeper in the parking lot? Why was that never...
You know, this is something that... You're talking about people who sold a story to a tabloid publication.
Are you saying there was no connection? You didn't buy anything?
I am not going to dignify the details in that stupid story. The only thing I would ask you to consider is this, Alice. if you want to believe all that was true, how come none of it was pursued?
I'm talking about money. That's the whole point.
What
are you
money?
Saying you did not meet this housekeeper in the parking lot?
I'm not commenting on that. I'm not going to dignify it by doing so.
Well, that's how you're getting around it.
No, I'm not getting around anything. I'm answering your question. I'm not going to dignify such tripe. If you want to consider the National Enquirer something that's legitimate, you feel free. Go right ahead. I just ask you, why was none of that stuff pursued? Why was it doctor shopping?
Man, I got to remember that. Next time somebody, all of you, take that as a hint, right? You know, get a lesson from that right now. Next time you're talking to somebody and they get you over a barrel like that woman had and was beating him with a stick, and she was, just say, I'm not going to dignify that. So all together now, let's practice that. Somebody's getting the, I'm not going to dignify that with an answer. See, that's all you have to do. And the bastard, he admitted he spent millions of dollars. Old Roy Black must have got himself a new car and a new house over in Palm Beach and had some cash left over off of old Rushy Limbaugh. But he doesn't want to talk about the maid in the parking lot, does he? Oh, no. Doesn't want to dignify that. No, let's not dignify that, Russ. You're a hoot. You really are. America's anchor man. America's bullshitter. That's what Rush Limbaugh is. I do hope there are enough people in the country who are intelligent enough, who are maybe were fans of that man, that by now they've seen through the transparency that he's as a man. You know, he's a good talk show host. I give him that. As a man, he's nothing. Nothing. That's what Rush Limbaugh is as a man. Fine talk show host. Can't argue with that because he's made it to the top. And however he's done it, he's done it. I give him kudos for that. He is at the top of the heap and probably will be until he chooses not to be anymore. But as a man, wow. Don't know how anybody could listen to him every day and see, that a boy, Rush, mega dittos, Rush, but that woman had his number, didn't she? Oh, yeah, she did. Hey, we're going to pause for a break. It's the bottom of the hour. I need a drink, a couple sandwiches. I don't know what, no, not really. And we'll be back in just a minute or two.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator. You're free, and freedom is beautiful. And, you know, it'll take time to restore chaos and order, but we will.
Started no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of peace.
Ah, yeah, lies, lies, great big lies. What are they talking about? I don't know. Oh, okay, I guess they're talking about Mr. Junior Bush. There's a guy that, I guess, has told a few little fibs in his lifetime. I don't know. You know, I got this, somebody sent me this little note here. There's a guy by the name of Larry DeRita. And he's one of Donnie Rumsfeld's closest advisors in the Department of Defense. And when I tell you what this story's a little story's about here, about Larry DeRita, I guess you will understand exactly why he is one of Donnie Rumsfeld's closest advisors at the Department of Defense. He is leaving the Defense Department, and he's taken a senior communications post with Bank of America in Charlotte, North Carolina. Mr. DeRita, a former Navy officer and a former Heritage Foundation analyst, that tells you enough right there, was one of Mr. Rumsfeld's first aides to arrive on the scene in February 2001. He handled special projects, press relations, and regular squash matches with the 73-year-old defense chief. I don't know why they threw that in there. Anyway, good old Larry. We don't have enough time here to go through all of his exploits, but here's a little something that he was involved in. The night DeRita flew into Kuwait in early April, he was briefed by senior officials, and when the deputy leader of the reconstruction pillar, Chris Milligan, spoke about the need to show early benefits to the Iraqi people, DeRita slammed his fist down on the table and said, "We don't owe the people of Iraq anything. We're giving them their freedom. That's enough." A few days later, by which time ORHA officials realized that DeRita had the full confidence of Rumsfeld, the secretary stood up at a meeting of about 50 people in the Hilton conference room. The State Department messed up Bosnia and Kosovo, he told his audience, which included many Foreign Service officials, and the Pentagon wasn't going to let it happen in Iraq. We're going to stand up an interim Iraqi government, hand power over to them, and get out of there in 3 or 4 months, DeRita announced. All but 25,000 soldiers will be out by the beginning of September. Remember, this is 3 years ago. To Paul Hughes, Garner's planning chief, it sounded like they were going to package up 5 pounds of crap in a nice foil wrapper and hand it off and say good luck. It might look nice, but it'd still be a 5 pound package of crap. So here we go. We have Bush's, we have Rummy's number one advisor, his senior advisor at the Pentagon, actually told everybody when they went into Iraq that we're going to stand up an interim Iraqi government, hand power over to them, and get out of there in 3 or 4 months. Well, 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 is it not becoming a little more clear every single day why this escapade into Iraq is turned into such a horrible fiasco? And I mean horrible fiasco. Absolutely amazing story. I wish somebody would let me know. I have been so busy with show prep and other things today that I did not get a chance to see the press conference of Mr. Tony Snow. Did he have one today at the White House? Does anybody know? I wish somebody let me know if you do know that. I'm trying to search around on the internet as we speak here and find out if he had one today. I'd like to know kind of how it's going. You know, yesterday was his first day as the new Minister of Propaganda for this administration, and this could really get interesting. My sources tell me that they are amazed. And I didn't really know, but the people I know in Washington tell me, and they use that word, they're amazed that Snow would give up a couple of million bucks a year in his position at Fox and his radio program for the $150,000, $7,000 he'll be getting now. Give up a couple million bucks for $157,000. These people know him. Especially since Snow is at the time of one's life where one usually enjoys one's highest level of income. You know, at his age, he's in the prime of life right now. But I'm told he did so on a conditional basis, and that one of his conditions was that he have the ear of the president rather than be another Scotty McClellan who was told what to go out and say every single day, whether he thought it was right or wrong. They told him to go out and say it, and he did. Apparently, Snow has been convinced that Bush will listen to his suggestions because, you know, Snow's worked in the White House before. So he thinks Bush is going to listen to his suggestions on how to spin the issues to the puppy press and the ignorant Republican base who, as of late, had been known to be questioning some of Bush's decision-making. So Snow thinks he can reverse that trend and come in, you know, but the president has to listen to him. Of course, being part of a huge propaganda machine for the past few years does give Snow some major credibility in the battle for the hearts and minds of the ignorant and gullible masses who are the Fox listeners. Fox News has done so well at Republican propaganda that one really has to wonder if they haven't found some heretofore secret unpublished diaries of Herman Goring someplace on the subject of mind control, of the mindless. Make no mistake about it, Snow has been an integral part of Rupert Murdoch's ministry of propaganda for profit. And, you know, one thing, whether you're Republican or Democrat, you got to face it. He doesn't look like Goring, nor does he sound like him. Snow is a fresh-faced, soft-spoken man, got the likability thing going for him. Just the kind of guy you'd want in order to convince the masses of ignoramuses who accept Fox News as their source of information. He's the guy next door, whom you see mowing the lawn and taking out the garbage. He's the guy that might be the president of the local PTA and sits in the front pew of the local Baptist church every Sunday morning. That's the way people see Tony Snow. He might even be the Sunday school teacher. Who knows? Unlike Ari Fleischer, who I've always maintained would have looked right at home in one of those flashy SS uniforms, Snow is a choir boy. And unlike Scotty McClellan, the poor sap who was just absolutely intellectually defenseless against some of the reporters, Snow is a smart guy. He really is. Snow's appointment was described as a shift in strategy to a more powerful press secretary who has the ear of the president and walk-in privileges, a seat at the table when policy's being made. And you know, that's one of those things a guy like Snow just wouldn't be able to walk away from. You know, you kind of got a broker's role between journalists in the White House. And I don't know if any of that's true, but if it is true, Tony Snow will walk into the Oval Office every morning and walk out with some genuine answers. If it is true, he'll tell the president and all the president's men that giving the reporter the reporters the usual Snow job just won't do. If he's actually going to do that, when reporters ask something about something as sensitive as Porter Goss leaving, seemingly on a moment's notice, he'll be able to come up with some sort of a cogent answer that actually makes sense instead of the McClellan, type of babble. Having been in the business himself, he just might be sensitive to the needs of the reporters and accept that most of the questions asked are legitimate and try his best to accommodate him somehow while still maintaining some sort of loyalty to the president. If things don't go differently than they have been, I don't care how much the press corps likes Snow, they'll eat him alive. because they're all on red alert right now, the press and the White House are. You know, there was an indication from Josh Bolton last week when he said it may be worth considering whether to end the daily televised news briefings, the press briefing, where reporters and the press secretary frequently air disputes in front of the cameras. Now, when Bolton starts talking like that, that means that they're starting to clam up. They're starting to board up the windows at the White House. That's exactly what they're going to do. When the chief of staff suggests a thing like that, you know it's probably coming. But he said he's going to leave that decision in Snow's hands. And if that happens, we'll know that the administration, especially Josh Bolton, has decided to button their lips even further and shut out the press and the people absolutely altogether. And I think if they had their way, that's exactly what they would do. They would shut everybody out altogether. They'd love nothing more than that, never have to talk to the press again. But if they do that, I think the press ought to retaliate. And if they do that, we'll see if the press has any guts. I doubt that they do. But I think they ought to retaliate by not sending anyone to cover anything Bush does. Nothing. I don't care if he's got the King of Siam on the front lawn of the White House and Tony Blair and, whoever. Just don't send anybody. Don't send anybody at all. No cameras. No microphones, no nothing. Screw him. If they don't want to talk to the press, if they don't want to cooperate with the press and allow the press to do what the press does best, as report the news to the people as they see it and as they are told it, supposedly, honestly, from the administration, then the press just ought to fight back. You know, we can have news. We can have the nightly news every night without any politics news. Yes, we can. We can have news without anything coming out of the White House. There's plenty of stories to cover around the world. Plenty of stories. We could spend 30 minutes every night and all the nightly news on the story in Darfur alone. We could talk about gas prices for 30 minutes every night. There are many, many, many stories we could talk about all night. So to hell with them. Screw them. If they don't want to cooperate with the press, if they don't want to be straight up with the American people, screw them. Don't send anybody to cover them. That's what I would do. Of course, there is one problem with that. Fox News would then be able to send an entire entourage. They'd be able to send a busload of reporters to everything, and they'll be able to cover it. But then again, if that's all it would cover, it would be Fox News. That's the only place you'd be able to see it, and most people with any sense don't watch Fox News. So my boycott idea here would work. Imagine not seeing anything on CBS, NBC, ABC News at night, or on MSNBC or CNN. Let Fox have all the coverage they want. Let them have it all. I'll bet you Bush would come around. I bet you Josh Bolton might just change his mind if the press just said, to hell with you guys. If you're not going to be straight up with us, we're not going to cover you anymore. I think it'd be refreshing. Don't you? Don't you think it'd just be refreshing to turn on the nightly news once in a while and not see another scandal coming out about the Bush administration? Not seeing another, Jeff Gannon story, for example. Wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice just to turn on your TV and you don't see the Josh Boltons and the Karl Roves and the Bartlett's? Isn't Bartlett smooth? All those people standing out just jerking the press around, telling one fat lie after another. Public sitting home drinking a beer going, yeah, that's right. No, I think it'd be good. So, I'll say, I think they ought to retaliate. Don't send anybody, no reporters at his little rose garden gatherings, no reporters at the ranch to report every little word he wants to put in front of the public. No reporters to accompany him on Air Force One to spread whatever propaganda he wants out that day. You know, if they did it, I mean, there's no doubt about it. Fox News would probably build an addition on the White House and cover everything from their point of view, which would kind of like be like Hermann Göring being the editor of your local newspaper, but nonetheless. That way you could make better use of your reporters by having them cover actual news instead of being mouthpieces for Bush, which is all most of them have been for the last 5 or 6 years. The news services need to let Bush know that they're working for the people, not as megaphones for the Bush administration. And do they have the courage and conviction to do that? I doubt it. I doubt it. We can only hope Tony Snow's got some kind of honor and won't accept being nothing more than another one of Bush's paid whores. We'll see. I don't know. Don't know what'll happen there. But wouldn't it be refreshing? I'm going to call all the press people tomorrow. I'm going to tell them that. My studio audience is looking at me. I'm going to tell them I want to boycott the White House. That's right. We're going to boycott the White House. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. That's one of those songs that just didn't end real quick. That's a long, lingering death there. Hey, glad to have you along with us here today on the Guy James Show. Want to say a special hello to Jim in Germany. He sent me a nice email, sent a contribution to the program. He's an expat that lives over there now. And Jim, well, let me see. I don't know what time it is in Germany right now. It's got to be, what, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock almost. I don't know. I'm not sure. But it's late at night, and he said listen to the show every day. So I'm glad to know that. And I do appreciate getting your emails and your thoughts and suggestions for the show and so forth. I'm told that I'd mention this more often, but I'm not going to. But I will mention it since about a half a dozen people told me today that they didn't know that this was a listener-supported program. So I'm telling you now, it is a listener-supported program. And it does cost money to stream the program and the phone bill and all that sort of thing. And we hope you'll help keep the show on the air. It doesn't cost as much as like a CBS program, but it does cost money to keep it going. So we hope you'll help us out with it. And you can do that at the website, www.theguyjamesshow.com. There's a place on there for PayPal. And there's also our snail mail address. And we acknowledge the folks that that send contributions to the program, and we appreciate it very, very, very much, more than you know. And we'll endeavor to try and acknowledge everybody that does that all the time. I'm getting sign language here, and I don't know sign language anyway. Interesting that Mr. Goss quit his job on Friday. He was fired, actually. And he ends up at a place that I know very, very well on Saturday. Very well. Extremely well. And he spoke to the graduating class at Tiffin University in Tiffin, Ohio. It's up there in Heidelberg College area, Heidelberg University, and wonderful little camp. Anyway, he spoke to the graduates up there. And I found it interesting that one of the things Goss told them, and I got this right out of the transcript of his speech. Imagine telling a group of graduating college students this. He told the graduating students that if he were addressing a graduating class of CIA caseworkers, he would advise them, admit nothing, deny everything, and make counter-accusations. Now, is that the Bush administration's modus operandi or not? Admit nothing, deny everything, and make counter-accusations. I mean, that is Karl Rove. That is Lee Atwater. I mean, that's... Why would you tell... I don't know. I just found that extremely weird. I found it weird that they would have him up there to speak to him anyway. I really did. This administration is getting so mired in the muck that I bet they all wish for the good old days when there was just one, you know. They probably think Clinton had it real good, that he only had like one thing. He only had like the Monica Lewinsky thing. It was all that was bugging him. These guys got like 50 things. And isn't the Jack Abramoff thing just blowing up into... My God, that's going to cover all of Washington before it's over with. Now he's supposedly involved in the Hooker Gate thing. Just rampant. Just absolutely rampant. And now they're saying that Duke Cunningham, there's a reason they parsed the words that the limo driver said they didn't know of any woman that was there. That now that they think it was a male prostitution ring that went there, that the CIA guys and all that. It's a sleazy mess is what it is. A big old sleazy mess. And it's going to be interesting to see if these guys can worm their way out of it. But they've got so much on their plate right now. Do you remember at the height of the Clinton impeachment where people were saying, how can the man govern? How can he govern? Why doesn't he resign? How can he govern with all of this going on? It's just he can't possibly govern. Well, hell, Bush has got 10 times as much stuff going on about him as Clinton ever did. Of course, he's not governing either. I never really thought of it that way. How can you govern? Well, he never could govern. But even Cheney, who's been the de facto president for a long, long time, how can he govern? But then, I don't know, they must be immune to all this stuff, don't you think? It just must right off of, like water off a duck's back, off a lame duck's back. Well, that was good, off a lame duck's back, yeah. I don't know of a lame duck who's ever been lamer than this one we've got in there right now. Yeah, of course, he was a lame duck the day he took office, and Cheney, I wonder... does Cheney, when the cameras aren't around, does Cheney allow him to sit at the president's desk, I wonder? Or do you say, Junior, get the hell out of here. What are you doing in here? We're talking. Yeah, go play. Go ride your bike. leave us alone. We're talking about important things. Me and my oil buddy pals here, you wouldn't understand anyway, Junior. You wouldn't understand at all. So just go on your way. And if you know we need you for anything, if we need you for a photo op, then you know you bring your bike in, get your good clothes on, come up, get your picture taken, sign the bill. I know you won't know what the bill's about, but don't worry about it. You haven't known what any bill's about so far. Why should you start right now? So just get lost and, go out and play, and we'll call you if we need you for anything. I kind of think that's the way it goes in the White House with Cheney and the guys. Hey, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. We hope you'll stay with us, and we'll be back in just a few.
This is the Quality News Network. Iraqi politicians say they are within a few days of finally forming a unified government. The breakthrough came after leaders agreed to fill key posts with independents. It'll be the first full-term Iraqi government since the country's invasion in 2003. Meantime, in Iraq, the bodies of 11 victims of sectarian violence, including a 10-year-old boy, were found bound and beheaded in the Tigris River southeast of Baghdad. Seven were wearing uniforms from the Iraqi security forces. The U.S. will appear before the U.N. next Monday to defend its use of aggressive interrogation tactics in the war on terror. At issue is whether the Bush administration has violated an international ban on torture and abuse of prisoners at home and abroad. In New York, the U.N. Security Council again failed to agree on how to deal with Iran's nuclear program. Meanwhile, an Iranian negotiator said today that Tehran has no intention of withdrawing from the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. President Bush says diplomacy is the first and most important option in dealing with that situation. In Brazil, the country has opened its first uranium enrichment plant to produce fuel for nuclear power. It is the same sort of facility Iran has constructed, but Brazil has convinced the international community its goals are peaceful, designed to produce power, not weapons. In Florida, the governor has declared a state of emergency. Fires have roared over more than 8,000 acres. Roads are closed. Buildings are smoldering. 4 people are dead. The National Guard is on standby alert. In Israel, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas asked Middle Eastern peace brokers to lift a freeze on foreign aid to the Hamas-led government. A power struggle between the two major Palestinian factions continues to take lives, raising fear of civil war. Yesterday, 3 were killed in the Gaza Strip. Today, 11 people were wounded. In India, dozens of people have died as average temperatures top 112 degrees. Indian scientists blame global warming. In Beijing, Chinese government officials are demanding the return of 5 Chinese Muslims who were released from Guantanamo Bay Detention Center. The U.S. is allowing them to seek asylum in Albania instead of returning to China. You're listening to the Quality News Network. It's now 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
H&R Block is in trouble, accused by New York prosecutors of firing employees who did not push customers into buying a certain kind of IRA. Law enforcement says those IRAs lost money 85% of the time. A federal judge has ordered the former CEO of Gemstar TV Guide to pay a fine exceeding $22 million. The CEO was charged with investment fraud. Australian company Westfield is selling 8 U.S. malls to Centro and a private equity group. The deal is worth $550 million. New York State is constructing its first dry mill ethanol plant. The state will contribute $6 million to the venture as part of a strategy to wean New Yorkers away from foreign oil. A study released today says airline passengers can expect to face even more crowded conditions when they travel. U.S. airlines, many of them struggling with bankruptcy, are ordering very few new aircraft between now and the end of 2007. Verizon Communications was rebuffed when it made a $38 billion offer to acquire the 45% it doesn't already own of its own company. The company that owns that 45%, Vodafone, wants Verizon to add $12 billion more to its offer. Light sweet crude, $71.35 a barrel this morning. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow up 27 points, NASDAQ down 8, S&P 500 down 1. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, you better believe it. If you want the truth, you've come to the right place. The Truth and Broadcasting Network, the Guy James Show. The TIB Network, high above the TIB Broadcasting Building here. Top floor, actually. Looking out over the beautiful landscape of Southwest Florida and the Gulf of Mexico. Glad to have all of you along with us today. I will say that we still have beautiful beaches here in Southwest Florida. Beautiful beaches all over Florida. And one of the reasons we still have nice, beautiful, pristine beaches because the oil companies haven't been able to come up and put oil rigs, up close to shore and have oil spills and get our beaches nice and black. Can you say Exxon Valdez? So I don't know. Lots of people in other states are wanting them to drill in the Gulf of Mexico. Completely unabated drilling. And it appears that the Cubans, by the way, are going to be drilling about 45 miles off the shore of Key West. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. My opinion is, and I agree with some experts we've had on the program lately. Yeah, we need to get oil. We need to find oil. If it's easily extracted from the earth, let's go after it. Let's go get it. Let's be environmentally sensitive about it, though. Let's always do that. And it appears that the shale, and I'm no expert on it, but it appears that the shale out west is going to be in a very, very expensive proposition. The oil would have to get somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 a barrel, which is not to say that it won't pretty soon. And I'm damn tired of everybody sending in, if you're European and you're listening right now, I understand that you're paying $7 and $8 a gallon for gas and we're only paying $3 and complaining about it. I know that. I do. But my friends right now that are listening, in, especially in European countries, you have much better access to public transportation than we do in this country. You have much closer proximity to where you're going in most cases than we do in this big expansive land of ours. I know, we could build some public transportation. In fact, I will tell you that the good people of Florida not long ago, several years ago, voted to put in a high-speed rail system here in Florida to help alleviate some of the gasoline problems. But the Jebster, Mr. Bush's little brother, decided he didn't think we ought to do that, that we could not afford it. Now, we could not afford it, he said. Now, he did give state tax advantages to the rich folks here in Florida, some big tax advantages to the rich folks here in Florida, but gosh, we couldn't afford that high-speed rail system. So, yeah, we do have some excuses. We do. We have some excuses. But we have not been good. I'll admit, America has squandered a lot of oil. When I'm out on the road nowadays, I actually think that way. I think I may have mentioned before, out on the road, and I'm going to be out on the road after the program today. And I'll bet you 3/4 of the cars on the road that I'll be on don't absolutely need to be on that road. I bet you it's 3/4. If you get people to carpool, all this and that, people that are just heading out to dinner, people are doing this, doing that, I bet you 3/4 of the car, if it wasn't absolutely necessary, could be off the road tonight. And I'm not saying we Americans haven't been energy hogs, because we are. We're the best energy hogs, the most prolific energy hogs in the entire world. No doubt about it. Don't know anybody that's worse. So, but by golly, I do think we need to do better. Has somebody send me a few notes that I want to go through real quick. You'll be... Happy to know that the U.S. Army's new interrogation manual now bans waterboarding. The controversial practice of submerging a prisoner's head in water in an effort to make him talk. You know, they strap your head to a board and then they tip you. Drug program. The May 15th deadline is a-coming, and it's approaching quickly. USA Today reports the program is being used least by those who should benefit the most, the poor. Often minority Medicare beneficiaries, only 24% of such beneficiaries have been approved or have been enrolled. There is so much confusion over that god-awful Medicare prescription drug program that it's such a disaster. It's only beneficial to the drug companies. Man, oh man. And what else here in these notes? Lieutenant General Peter Chiarelli, the U.S. commander in charge of day-to-day military operations in Iraq, believes American troops, now this is kind of harsh, he believes American troops in Iraq have been their own worst enemy. That's pretty tough for a lieutenant general to say that. Their own worst enemy, unintentionally creating new insurgents by treating the Iraqi people in a heavy-handed or insensitive manner. Remember when I read you that letter from one of the troops just a couple of weeks ago about him telling how these private soldiers of fortune from this country, private security men, just shot Iraqis for fun? And what else we got on here? Gee whiz. Now, this is kind of disappointing. Last March, President Bush signed a bill to raise the national debt ceiling to a record $9 trillion. Well, guess what? They made a little mistake, and it wasn't enough to raise it to $9 trillion. They got to raise it to 10. So they got to go back and raise it up to $10 trillion. When he started, let me see now, he started in 2000. Let's see. This is 2006. So 224 years. In 224 years, our country had accumulated a $3 trillion debt in 224 years. And in the 6 years almost of the Bush administration, we've accumulated $7 trillion. $7 trillion in 6 years, $3 trillion in 224 years. What's wrong with this picture? I think you all know what's wrong with that picture. My goodness. And Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist has dubbed this week Health Week. But instead of taking up universal health care proposals, Frist yesterday pressed a vote to limit damages for pain and suffering in medical malpractice lawsuits, a move which would affect private health insurance premiums by just 0.5%. Thankfully, the Democrats blocked the bill. And Karl Rove is turning to the judiciary to rev up the conservative base. In a meeting yesterday, he told conservative activists and Senate staff that the administration would soon send the names of more than 20 judicial nominees to Capitol Hill for confirmation. I wonder how much longer Karl Rove is going to be walking around free. Anybody have any ideas on that? Fitz, are you getting ready to do something with Rove? I wish he'd let us know. I really do wish he'd let us know. And finally, Harper's Magazine reprints a 1971 FBI memo documenting a skit about then-director J. Edgar Hoover on the NBC program Rowan and Martin Laugh-In. All in all, this skit pertaining to the FBI was rather typical of the poor fare that is served on this so-called laugh show. Tasteless, sometimes downright vicious, jokes and a great deal of forced humor add up to a more telling commentary on this low-grade show itself than on the FBI. This is what Harper's Magazine printed back in 1971. I guess they didn't know about J. Edgar's, his proclivities at that time. I guess they just didn't know. My goodness. Lots of great stuff going on in Washington. I guess probably one of the most interesting ever, no question about it, was J. Edgar Hoover. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give us a call. Love to hear from you on the Guy James Show this afternoon. Got an interesting email from a fellow the other day. Said he was tired of having me talking about impeaching our president. He kept saying that in his email, our president. I guess legally he's our president, but he'll never be my president. I have a hard time, and I do slip now and then and say President Bush, but I really have a hard time putting those two things together. I really do. But anyway, a guy was chiding me. He said, you're always talking about impeaching the man. What do you want to impeach him for? Well, you know, I don't have time to go into lengthy emails with the right wingers. In fact, I won't. I just won't. I don't want to get involved in that with them. But he said we didn't have anything to impeach him for, and I made up a little list of things that Mr. Bush might be wanting to get impeached for. Lying to Congress, for example, and the American people about the need to invade Iraq. It's become more than clear that Iraq had no nuclear programs, no weapons of mass destruction, and posed no imminent threat to America whatsoever. It was a lie when Bush told Americans we were at risk of attack in 2002 and 2003, and it was a lie when on March the 18th of 2003, he wrote Congress to announce his invasion of Iraq, saying it posed a threat to America and was linked to 9/11. That was a flat-out lie, and I believe we now I know we have all the information we could ever need to prove that one. There is the worst lawyer, the worst drunk public defender in New York City could take that case and win that one. We'd have to be a drunk public defender prosecutor, wouldn't he? Okay. So that's one thing. How about refusing to cooperate with the Congressional and 9/11 Commission probes? To this day, the White House has refused to respond to legitimate requests from such committees for information needed to investigate 9/11 and to help guard against future attacks. They have stonewalled almost the entire way through on that. Those poor families. Those families of those people that died on those airplanes and died in the tower. Do they not deserve the truth from this administration, and yet these lying bastards won't give it to them? What kind of people are we dealing with here? Impeachment that's not good enough for them. All right, our third on our list of impeachment offenses, violating the Bill of Rights. President Bush has willfully authorized the indefinite detention without charge of U.S. citizens and the detention and deportation of legal residents, and has illegally used the National Security Agency to spy upon Americans without a court order. He's admitted that one. Okay? To me, that is easily an impeachable offense. Moving on, how about obstruction of justice? While the special counsel's investigation is continuing, it appears that Bush was at least aware of efforts to cover up and may well have been involved in a White House campaign to punish and discredit former Ambassador Joseph Wilson by illegally exposing his wife, Valerie Plame, as an undercover CIA operative. Yes, he did that. He was involved in that. I think we know that now. And, you know, how could you? Let me just play this little thing right here, especially knowing this.
MSNBC has learned new information about the damage caused by the White House leaks. Intelligence sources say Valerie Wilson was part of an operation 3 years ago tracking the proliferation of nuclear weapons material into Iran. And the sources allege that when Mrs. Wilson's cover was blown, the administration's ability to track Iran's nuclear ambitions was damaged as well. The White House considers Iran to be one of America's biggest threats.
Iranians should not have a nuclear weapon, the capacity to make a nuclear weapon, or the knowledge as to how to make a nuclear weapon. And now that we've got the goal in mind, we're working on the tactics.
The tactics indeed, Mr. President. Your office outed this woman, and here sometime later, and as you know, most of the people who defended you and your Mr. Vice President and the whole lousy stinking clan of you defended you. The right-wing press, Fox News, well, she wasn't working on anything that was undercover. She wasn't an undercover CIA agent. She was just a desk monkey. That's all she did. She was never undercover. She was never covert. What about this? She was working on the nuclear proliferation of Iran. My, how the chickens come home to roost sometimes. And so if we're not going to get him for impeachment on that, we've got one, two, three, four things so far. How about war crimes? There's powerful evidence Bush authorized, promoted, and then attempted to cover up a policy of kidnapping, renditioning, and torture, all in violation of the Geneva Convention, to which the United States most certainly is a signatory. I don't give a damn what Alberto Gonzalez says. What was he said? He said the Geneva Convention pertaining to this matter was quaint. Quaint indeed, Mr. Gonzalez. He also waged a war of aggression and engaged in a conspiracy to promote that war, all of which is a crime against peace under the Nuremberg Charter, which the United States helped to write. And abuse of power. Mr. Bush has willfully ignored more than 750 acts passed by Congress. 750. He signed in and then put on these signing statements that, okay, I signed it, but I'm not going to follow it because I don't think it's constitutional. How about criminal negligence? Incompetence isn't impeachable, but in the cases such as Bush's abject failure to deal with the threat and aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, or his failure to adequately protect troops sent into Iraq, or to plan for the aftermath of the Iraqi invasion, gross incompetence becomes criminal negligence. The same is true of this president's perhaps greatest crime, his failure to deal with and his willful obstruction of efforts to ward off global warming. Won't even admit that it's happening. Won't even admit it. You know, I think the least we can ask of this Republican-controlled Congress that'll never bring this up is an investigation of these crimes. It is interesting that the Republicans remain completely silent about this, isn't it? And you know what I find particularly troubling right now is I find it interesting and troubling that a lot of Democrats are remaining silent on this issue as well. And that's not something I'm particularly fond of at this time. I think our Democrats need to get tough. I think they need to play hardball for a change. They've let Karl Rove and the likes of Lee Atwater and those such people run over the Democratic nominees for all kinds of offices over the past few years. And we've sat there like a bunch of toads and not done anything about it. And now we have Democratic strategists. I really, I have to have a good laugh a lot of times when I see these Democratic strategists. getting paid the big bucks to be Democratic strategist by some of the Democrat think tanks, and I don't know who pays them, DNC, Democratic strategist. Some of them run lobbying firms themselves. But they're saying we should not mention that we're going to have investigations into the president this fall. We should, when our congressmen, our senators are running for office, they should not mention this. They should not bring this up that, oh, by the way, if we get in office, we're going to start investigations. John Conyers has got that on his website, that we need to start investigations. And Nancy Pelosi, the House Minority Leader, announced on Tim Russert's show on Sunday morning that, no, she didn't think that we ought to do that either. Well, you're a fighter, aren't you, Nancy? Man, I really sometimes have to agree with Karl Rove that the Democrats are a bunch of weenies and girly men, the way they act, afraid to go after the Republicans and afraid to mention that we're going to investigate him if we win the election. They think it'll scare off voters. They think they're using the Clinton situation on that when Clinton was impeached, that so many Republicans were so weary of that whole situation when it was over with, that it just turned off a lot of voters, and the voters stayed home, and it was not a good thing for the political process. Well, I think the difference is, number one, we had 8 solid years of it during the Clinton administration. They started in on him from day one. And I think the other difference is, we impeached the president over oral sex. So you see, it wasn't anything about getting 2,500 soldiers killed, or it wasn't about lying to Congress. It wasn't about any things I just mentioned. I think the American public's smart enough to differentiate between the two. So when we say we need to investigate this administration, I think every candidate running for office should bring it up and be proud to say it, and be forceful about it and say, yes, indeed, we will absolutely investigate these people, and if they should be prosecuted, they will be prosecuted, because we want to make sure that this will never happen again in our government. I don't care if it's a Republican. I don't care if it's a Democrat. I don't care who it is. If someone breaks the law, violates the Constitution of the United States, violates the standards of the American people, violates the trust of the American people that voted for them, if they do that and they do so illegally, they should be punished to the fullest extent of the law, and they should be made examples of. Absolutely. And I don't see anything wrong with every Democrat running for office just flat out saying it. That's what we need to do. And I'm pretty doggone disappointed that a lot of our people don't want to do that. Hey, we're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
We'll present information and intelligence about Iraq's illegal weapons programs, its attempts to hide those weapons from inspectors, and its links to terrorist groups.
Georgie Porgy Puddin' and Pie picked some boys and made them die.
Georgie Porgy Puddin' and Pie, in his playpen in the White House of Lies, sat around with all of his friends, told them all on him to depend. Oil is what all of us need, the American habit will feed. There's a place that we're gonna attack, for their oil and for Daddy Iraq. Georgie Porgy made up a war, told some lies about what it was for. Now your baby is out in Iraq. Do you know if they're coming back? Side. Gotta find somewhere to hide. Oh, mama,
Oh, yeah, cronies. Boy, there's lots of those walking around in Washington, D.C. That's a fact. Cronyism, I don't think, has ever been more prolific in Washington than it is today. Tremendous number of cronies in the Bush administration. I will say one thing, that the Bush people are loyal to their friends. I'll give them that. They most certainly are. Let me see here. It's 866-546-5254. You got plenty of time to call the program yet. 866-546-5254. Kind of a slow day on the telephones. Lots of people listening. Very few people calling. Don't understand that. Anyway, a lot of people have been criticizing the Democrats lately, and I've done a little bit of it myself, more than a little bit. And people are asking, why haven't the Democrats grabbed the initiative, I guess you'd call it, in the political battle? Why haven't we grabbed it? Why hadn't the party just jumped all over Bush and the Republicans with both feet? And I really think the answer to that question is very involved, and it may come as a result of folks not completely understanding the fundamental nature of the two-party system that we have. I've always believed that if there's one thing that will unify Democrats, it is that we have the goal of forming a government that works for the common good of all the people. That's something all my life, those two words, common good, go hand in hand with the Democratic Party. I've always had that in my mind. And as I explained a couple of days ago, we're a very diverse people, and if we're to prosper as a nation and a society, the common good has to be above all else. It has to be the main goal. And we Democrats are operating under this big tent that is filled with so many different groups so as to become very unwieldy at times, but very unified at others. And, you know, as I see it, many times in the past, these many groups inside our party have worked together to solve problems that have really kept our nation from working for the common good. Unfortunately, working for the common good is a very complex message that doesn't play very well on sound bites on the evening news. And a lot of people, you know, the Republicans have realized that. And the Republicans see this as a threat, and they do everything they can to keep us divided. They don't want to see us getting together and be unified. And that's why they often run a campaign of fear as their main weapon against the common good. The Republicans prefer the status quo. Franklin Roosevelt, and you know how I mangle these sayings once in a while, but I'm pretty sure the gist of it is Franklin Roosevelt said something like a Republican is a person with two perfectly good feet who hasn't yet learned to walk forward, something like that anyway. The status quo, that's what Republicans mean, status quo. And the status quo in America is that there's a small number of very rich men and women who control the entire country. And most of these wealthy people got their money the easy way by inheriting it from their rich and powerful families. They really do believe that because of their money, they deserve to have the power and influence over the rest of us. And I looked up a list the other day of the rich and powerful people who lobby really hard for this, that, and the other thing in the Republican government. The Soderbergh family. They're an extremely rich real estate company. The Blethyn family from the Seattle Times out that way. All these folks are looking to overturn the estate tax. The Cox family, Cox Enterprises. The DeVos and Rich and Van Andel families of Amway, you know all about them. The Dorrance family from the Campbell Soup Company. The Gallo, yes, the wine people. They've been fighting the estate tax for at least 18 years. The Harbert family, richest people in Alabama, again, they're fighting the estate tax. The Johnson family that founded the Black Entertainment Television, they're fighting the estate tax. You can always tell these people are always fighting the estate. The Koch family from Koch Industries, that's not Coca-Cola. They own Georgia-Pacific Company and a list of other companies. Again, they're fighting, lobbying very hard, spending millions to avoid the estate tax. The Mars family from the Mars Candy Bar Company. I know everybody knows that that's one of the, it's the third largest privately held company in America. Imagine that, privately held. $19 billion in annual revenue, privately held company. And the Mayer family from Captiva Resources, the Nordstrom family, the Sobrato family, the Stevens family. Y'all know the Stevens family. And the Walton family. Yes, those Waltons. And one that's dear to my heart, the Timken family from Canton, Ohio. Another group that would save a veritable fortune if the estate tax were repealed. The Wegman family of Wegman's Food Markets up north. And the list goes on and on and on of these mega wealthy people who don't want to pay their fair share. They've prospered tremendously from our economy, and they want exceptions. What they want. They don't want to pay back. That's not something they want to face. But, you know, let's face it. Despite those people, the Paul Allens and the Bill Gates of the country are extremely rare. These, you've heard the old saying, a whore in church. Well, Paul Allen and Bill Gates would be the whores in the Republican church because they got there by making their own money instead of getting it from mommy and daddy like so many of these people do. Most of the rich and powerful families who pass their money down from generation to generation have a real fear of losing their money and power. And why do they fear losing it? And Bill Gates doesn't? Because Bill Gates knows that he could start over tomorrow and make another fortune. And these other people, they didn't make the money themselves. They don't know how, and they don't have what it takes to do it. And that's their greatest fear, is losing their money. So that's why they get in there and fight so hard for this estate tax repeal. Don't get me wrong here. There's a lot of very rich Americans that look at their wealth and power quite differently. These people tend to be very generous. They give to charities, and they fund worthy projects for the common good of America. People with wealth who do that are most generally Democrats. And these people realize that it's not just the rich and powerful that deserve a decent life. They realize that the common good is something that benefits all people, not just the wealthy upper class that will at all costs protect their money and status. So the goal then becomes raising money to educate voters about the need for promoting the common good. And that phrase common good, you know, we say common good because it's good for everybody. You know, what would they say? It's about the rising tide, you know, raises all the boats up in the air. The problem is that this noble goal is that seeking the common good doesn't always raise the funds needed to run a successful campaign. The people who see this goal as an important issue are the people that have been taken advantage of in one way or another. People who are on top of the heap tend to have expendable income that they're willing to contribute to political causes, and people who are being crushed at the bottom, which is about 50 or 60% of the people right now, are doing everything they can just to get by. And in order to raise money to support the goal of establishing the common good for all Americans, the Democrats have approached naturally organizations representing people who have high proportions of those people who've been abused by the system. These groups are organized by common interest, like most groups are. And perfect examples of these organizations are the NAACP, the Teachers Union, the Teamsters, United Farm Workers, and similar groups, all groups, by the way, that are hated like grim death by the Republicans. These groups have traditionally fought for fairness and rights for their members, and like any organized group, they seek to get as much as they can for the people they represent. It isn't their job to worry about the impact on other workers or other groups. So these groups continue to contribute to Democrats in order to get their voices heard. So, you know, what it boils down to is Democrats, like any political group, find themselves facing the problems associated with conflict of interest from time to time. Democrats stand for the common good of all Americans, and they take money from people who seek to remedy the shortcomings of the current system. But some of the shortcomings are worse than other shortcomings. Some solutions to the shortcomings affect members who contribute to the overall cause. Democrats tend to be successful. Democrats, when they understand the nuance of the many complex issues that affect all the different groups of Americans, those are the ones that become successful. And, you know, you might think that a politician who understands the many facets of the issues would be the type of politicians that every American would want for their leaders, but not everyone cares about others, especially people who have been raised in somewhat uniform environments. And if you don't have experience, if you don't experience different people, then you're not likely to care what happens to those people from, you know, that are different from yourself. People with this attitude don't believe in the common good for all Americans. Instead, they seek the common good for their particular group. Whites for whites, black for whites, etc. The leaders of the Republican Party have seized upon this weakness, and they've used it over and over and over again for their advantage. And since the main goal of the Republican lead is to maintain the status quo, they go out and solicit their message to people who are doing reasonably well, and I think this is where their real success comes in. They go out and get the average guy who's doing okay, and average guy wishes to maintain the status quo. However, this group isn't large enough to elect Republicans at every election. The problem is that this group of satisfied people changes depending upon the economy, and in bad times, Republicans could never be elected because this group gets very small, and I think that's one reason they're very, very scared right now. So, conservative Republicans have turned to tactics to attract larger groups of people to their party, and they've looked for people who wish to maintain the status quo in many different ways, including social issues. They've reached out to religious people who felt that society has grown less religious. You hear that all the time. So they appeal to these people to win votes, and they promise to return the country to the religiosity of years gone by. And they create a vision of times gone by where everybody did the right thing because they followed the law, God's law. The vision of everybody doing the right thing turns, you know, it tends to distract people from the question of whether society is working for the common good or not. The leaders of the Republican Party know that pursuing the common good is not good for the wealthy because it brings up questions of fairness in education, potential jobs, and the chance to attain the wealth that Republicans sell as the American dream. The most important strategy of the Republican Party is to use fear and ignorance of the electorate to their advantage, and they do it masterfully. Fear and ignorance prevents people from challenging the status quo. Fear and ignorance makes people afraid to challenge authority. Fear and ignorance prevents society from attaining the Democrats' goal of a common good for all of Americans. Fear and ignorance has done a lot of damage to this country, and the Republicans foster it at every chance they get. So if the Democrats are going to have any hope of getting a unified message out to the general public, it needs to be in the form of sound bites promoting the common good of all Americans. The common good means a pristine environment for all Americans. The common good means a chance for a good education for all Americans. The common good means bringing together those diverse groups that are really seeking to make a better America for everybody. That's what Democrats do best. That's what we've always done best. And we better work real hard on it this year. This is a great chance this year for the Democrats to prosper. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to give us a call. You know, it's a tough road to hoe right now. Jobs, I've thought about this vicious cycle that we're involved in right now. Our jobs are being shipped overseas to China. They're being shipped to Mexico. They're being shipped to a lot of places around the world. We did a program very, very recently talking about the massive loss of jobs here in this country. And they, for the most part, have been jobs that average Joe and Sally American have had, and the kind of people who scrimp and save to send their kids away to college. And here's the dilemma posed right now. This country is changing from an industrial society, and it's been taking place for some time now. But a manufacturing and industrial society, we are changing. And we're changing into an information age. We're changing into a society where most of the jobs take more education. The problem here is, as the industrial and manufacturing jobs are shipped overseas, the average Joe American has lost his job. and ends up working at Walmart for minimum wage, or you know, someplace for minimum wage or slightly above it, and they can't afford to send their kids to college. And if they can't afford to send their kids to college, and all the new jobs are requiring higher education, where does that leave average American? Do you see the problem here? Do you see the terrible problem? You know, it's average Joe and Sally American who built this country. I don't care what anybody says. It wasn't the Carnegies and the Mellons and the Rockefellers. It wasn't. It was average Joe and Sally American. Of all stripes, of all colors, of all religions. The average people built this country. I say that over and over again. And the average people are losing their jobs. And when they lose their jobs, they can no longer afford to send their kids to college. And since we have become a society now where all the new jobs require a greater degree of education than before, require a college degree, in many cases a master's degree, engineering, science, environmental sciences, all these things require a college degree. But now most of the people can't afford to send their kids to college. And so the kids in college from now on will be an elite class. And the average kid, what's he going to do? Going to spiral downward? Join the rest of the middle class people that have left the middle class and headed for the poor class and headed for the bottom of the barrel economically in this country? What's wrong with this picture? Does anybody see? You know, I read an article written by a gentleman from China, a businessman in China. And he mentioned the fact, don't blame this on us. Don't blame this on the Chinese that your jobs are coming here. It's the Americans' fault that the jobs are coming here. Many of the American jobs that are here in China, he wrote, are American companies. And they didn't bring their companies here so that they could create jobs for Chinese. They brought them here because they could hire our laborers cheaper than they could hire your laborers. And so with no thought for the American worker, General Motors, Coca-Cola, whoever, giant American companies, have billions and billions of dollars invested in China. Kentucky Fried Chicken, I think, is the number one restaurant in China now. And so, the Chinese guy is right. The Chinese aren't responsible for it. It's the big mega American corporations that are responsible for it. They shipped the jobs over there because they wanted greater benefits for their stockholders and their boards of directors and their CEOs and all the people that have the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars at the top of those corporations. And so the Chinese guy is right. We have nobody to blame but ourselves. And that's why I said the other day, and I got a nasty email on account of it, that I think companies like General Motors, I think companies like Delphi, I think these companies that are shipping thousands upon thousands of jobs overseas ought to take that American flag down from in front of their factories. Because they don't deserve to fly it anymore. They should just take the flag down and get a big facsimile made of $100 bill, a flag that looks like $100 bill, and fly it instead, because that's where their allegiance is. Their allegiance is not to the flag of the United States of America. Oh, it's to the American dollar, all right. That's what it's come to. That's why we're in the shape we're in. And yet, day after day after day, most of the people in America just turned a blind eye to this mess we're in. More and more people every day are realizing that they can't send their kids to college. More and more kids are realizing nowadays that if they don't go to college, they're going to be on minimum wage the rest of their lives. More and more kids are realizing nowadays if they get a bachelor's degree, that isn't good enough anymore. So what do we do? It's a paradox. I don't know what the answer is. We are producing jobs that require a great deal of education. We're importing people from other countries to take those jobs because we don't have qualified people here to do it, because we can't afford to send our average kids to college to take those jobs. It's a looks like a drip, 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 slow death for America as we knew it. And it's not too late to turn it around, but it's certainly not encouraging right now, that's for sure. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I guess I kind of ended this program on a downer today, but when I do think about this situation, and I study the situation with the job loss and the American corporations' investments overseas, I study that situation a lot, and I have a good understanding of it. And it's so easy to see what's happening. It's just so easy to see the transfer of wealth that has taken place. You know, there was a day when most people who worked at General Motors had a pretty good little portfolio of General Motors stock. And they came to Florida and bought a condo. And they were going to retire down here and live 6 months here. They're not going to do that anymore. They can't afford the stock. First and second of all, the General Motors stock isn't worth a whole hell of a lot anymore. And these companies are bailing out on pensions. And yet they're shielding billions of dollars of income that they're making in other countries and telling the American worker that they owe the pension to that they can't afford to pay them because they don't have the money. When in fact, they're making hundreds and millions and billions of dollars in other countries, but that doesn't count. That doesn't count. We're bankrupt here in America, but we're doing just fine in China, thank you. But our American workers that put in 30 years... major portion of their working life for us, they don't count anymore. That's how it is. Well, you weren't a very active audience today. I must say I'm disappointed in you. I know a lot of you listening, I do see that, but very few phone calls today, and I don't know why that is. Perhaps that's my fault. I'll have to try and do something to fix that situation, but to be perfectly honest, I don't enjoy a program like the one today. I've done all the talking, and I enjoy being stimulated by conversations from you folks. So, I don't know. We have to figure a resolution to that somehow. I don't know what the answer is, but I do not like doing a program like I've done today whatsoever. It becomes tedious and difficult and boring. And if it's tedious and difficult and boring to me, it must seem to be the same to you. I don't know. But I do appreciate everybody listening. I do. To hear me preach for two solid hours today with no phone calls. I guess you can tell what kind of a mood I'm in. Hey, I do appreciate you listening to the show. I do. And I hope you'll tell your friends about it. And the more the merrier. I'd be glad to have as many people aboard as possible. And maybe tomorrow some of you can pick up the phone. www.theguyjamesshow.com. Awfully glad to have you along today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.